Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday, the 23rd of September. Very nice to have you with us on such a nice day. It is. Let me introduce the panel to you, and then we'll get everybody in our talk mode. We're going to tell you how you can be a part of the conversation. It's as simple as that. We have a wonderful we have our all Catholic edition of the roundtable. The Pope is in town, and there's a Jewish holiday, and here we are. So, good morning, everyone.
Lighting, right?
Yes, let's introduce University of Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo to the program.
Hello.
Good morning, Ray Graff from WAMC's newsroom, the anchor,
and also
the rock.
You.
What?
And also
will we
thank you.
And Times Union Associate
You're
Editor.
You're dating yourself. It's with your spirit.
I'm old school.
And
this is Catholic stuff they're talking about.
Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain.
Good morning.
Is here. Good morning, all. Thank you very much for being with us. It's very nice to have you here. Let me just remind you that you can join in on the conversation roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org, and we'll be reading your letters throughout the morning and get an idea of what is on your mind as we talk about the topics that are happening. As we speak, as we talk, as we do the program, we look over our heads and there is a monitor of the president at the White House ready to welcome the Pope,
yeah.
Who is getting ready to arrive. He arrived in the United States yesterday afternoon around 4 o'clock, and that will be the first item that we'll talk about this morning. A busy day today for the Pope. And we'll get to the guest list about the state dinner in a minute, but let's talk about what we can expect.
Okay, here's my question about the Pope.
Yes.
Are there any other religious leaders who ever get this kind of rock star treatment? Do you think the Ayatollahs of Iran are jealous of this? I mean, they have Greek Orthodox clergymen have beautiful robes and pageantry, and
is
others are powerful.
Is
the reason for this?
Yeah,
is it 1-2 billion people?
Probably.
And but they're not all here.
No, but it's in deference to the size of the Roman Catholic Church and what the Pope represents across the globe. And in this particular case, it's the third Pope to visit Washington, D.C.,
yes,
so it's still kind of a new thing. And this is kind of like a rock star. We talked about it yesterday. I mean, his visit is getting crowds that very similar to some people who aren't just Catholic are coming out to get a glimpse, to get a peek at the Pope, as they say.
That's what intrigues me.
Yeah, so it's a very interesting time.
Is it correct? Am I correct that the last Pope to the United States was in 1979? Is
no.
that correct?
Oh, no, no. Pope Benedict came and he went to New York City and he went to, I think he went to the White House.
Okay. He did. In fact, it's fairly rare for the president to meet somebody at Andrews.
Yes.
And so President Obama was there yesterday. And I think W also went to Andrews Air Base and met Benedict when he arrived.
That's correct.
Okay,
yeah.
There were three visits?
Three popes before him have come, and that would be Pope John Paul II.
Right.
Pope Paul VI actually was the first one.
Yes.
And then Pope Benedict. So now this, I guess, is the fourth. Yeah, correct.
Okay. Then Pope John Paul II was in the late 70s, early 80s?
He first came in 79, October of 79. But he came a few times after that. He came to Denver to a World Youth Day.
I remember seeing him in Philadelphia when I was a kid and sitting on the side of Market Street and the Popemobile and watching him go down the street and thinking to myself – and now – well, you would never even think of doing it. They've got tickets and all this other stuff. You know, you can't even do that.
Mm-hmm.
Given out by politicians, by the way.
Well, yes. I mean, unless you look at the city – the whole thing is run by the Secret Service. The whole thing is overseen by the Secret Service. So they are allotting the tickets to, say, the Central Park would be the city of New York. So the entire municipality, and then they would have a drawing that would go to.
But I mean, Senator Schumer had X number to give away. And,
oh, sure.
And
well, that's always going to be the case,
have
right?
That.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's usually the case. People connected And I can remember when John Paul II came to the White House for a luncheon. Reagan, I believe, was president. Maybe it was when Jimmy Carter was still president. But the tickets were – there were stories about how celebrities and top media stars are trying to get tickets to the White House to be there. It's – I guess they want to be seen, you know, with the Pope.
When all is said and done, what do you think is going to be good? We talked about the Chinese president coming, and you said, you know, this is a foundation. So when you look at this visit, what do you think we get out of it?
Well, I think the Pope is trying to make clear that he's here on what he calls a pastoral visit. He's here to hope, to give hope and to inspire his followers. And the media and conservative politicians are doing a lot to try to politicize it. I don't think that's his intent at all.
Well, if you look at what he did in the 3 days that he spent in Cuba, he did not meet with dissidents. He did not go out and chastise publicly the Castro brothers for the communist regime and the repression that has gone on there for 50 years. But he did allude to freedom, and he alluded to people's individual rights. He made
compassion.
Right. Yeah. But he was compassionate. And as you said, and as the analyses have been, he was on a pastoral visit. He was there for the people and to encourage the people and to promote, you know, that message and not come. And so in that, I think we're probably safe. He's probably not going to go before Congress and come down.
It's not going to be Netanyahu before Congress.
I would be surprised. No, he'll be much more diplomatic. I think he'll allude to the Beatitudes and to the importance of recognizing the poor and the powerless and doing what you can to correct the, you know, the inequality and the injustice associated with that. But I think it'll be more pastoral. It won't be the
Which brings up a point you were making earlier. You said we were talking about it, the guest list at the White House. And I just said conservatives were politicizing. There's some thought that the Obama administration is trying to politicize the event too. So
let's take a break. When we come back, we will talk about that aspect of the story. We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from KW Home, East Hampton, Massachusetts, offering home furnishings and interior design services featuring furniture, rugs, lighting, and window treatments, kwhome.net. Berkshire Stringed Instrument School of Lutery, Windsor Mill, North Adams, Massachusetts, working to guide students through hand-building guitars, mandolins, and ukuleles, berkshirestringinstruments.com for class registration. And the Binghamton University School of Management, offering degrees and career preparation in finance, information science, marketing, and accounting, binghamton.edu.
Here we're watching the coverage live, which we shouldn't be doing, but we're watching the coverage live of the Pope.
He's out. Arriving at the White House.
Arriving at
the
White House.
He's out of the Hugo. He's now
it's
on
a
the red carpet.
Yeah,
he's on the red carpet.
And meeting with Michelle and Barack Obama. And any comments on what Michelle is wearing today?
Nothing I can repeat on air. Thank you.
Rosemary, we'd be interested to know.
No, not going there.
All right, let's talk about the guest list for the event that is happening tonight. And so, as you indicated, Rosemary, there is certainly a talk over the politicization of this. Differences over the guest list, which includes the first openly gay Episcopal bishop, a leader for transgender rights, a gay Catholic blogger, a prominent nun lobbyist who bucked the bishops on the Affordable Care Act for an event. And this is, I guess this is the event that is taking place now. Is that what I'm understanding? About 15,000 people at this particular event. And meanwhile, the spokesman for the White House, Josh Earnest, said there's plenty of opportunities for others to inject politics into the situation. It certainly is a protected constitutional right of theirs to do that, but that's not what the president is interested in. Neither the White House nor the Vatican denied that there had been discussions about the guest list. An American source close to the planning said it seemed that there was a misunderstanding that had been cleared up and that the crowd at the White House would be diverse in views.
I think if it were not diverse, it would not be representative of the U.S. The U.S. is an extraordinarily accepting and diverse place, and to hide that and just have people there who agree politically with the Pope and just to really recruit the faithful to come out, I think would miss an opportunity to demonstrate how we are a very accepting culture where we don't always agree on very specific things and sometimes very heavily disagree, we're able to still get together. And you would hope that's the place, and that's what the Pope will see today at the White House.
Well, what do they expect these people who disagree philosophically and morally with the Pope to do? Are they going to stand up and throw food at him at the dinner? Are they going to hold up signs? I keep going back to that famous White House dinner that was in House of Cards when Soviet dissidents at the dinner confront the president of the Soviet Union. I mean, I just can't imagine that happening. It's a huge gathering. Mm-hmm. I guess if they do it, we'd get a lot of press attention. So I hope they have guards.
Maybe
there.
Somebody will throw a shoe at the Pope or something, the way someone in Iraq threw a shoe, a journalist threw a shoe at W, but I doubt it.
So my understanding is the event that basically the guest list is the event that's happening right now.
15,000
15,000 at the White House, and then later on.
This is not a small intimate dinner where you get to air your differences with the Pope.
Now, you're not going to be schmoozing.
No.
No.
No. In fact, looking at the number of Marines between the people and the and the president and the Pope.
The invited guests and the Pope.
That's a lot of firepower right there between – it's quite a line between the Pope and
when
the –
When they say sit down, you probably will.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I certainly felt that way just with one nun, but you get the entire Catholic Church and Marines, I'm
– The baggage comes out.
Yeah, that's right.
So, Mike, isn't this more, do you think, like the Christian idea of you can break bread with someone even if you disagree with them?
I do think so. I think it demonstrates that and that's kind of what we used to see here in the U.S., where divergent political positions could people
sit
with those positions
together.
Could sit down together, and why we may disagree on this and this and this, and very seriously disagree on this, we still have in common our goals. In this particular case, I don't think anybody would want to not feed the hungry and not clothe the people who have no clothes and put shelter for the homeless. Who could disagree on that, even though they might disagree on big issues like gay marriage, abortion, transgender rights? I don't know. There's many other ones, too.
Feeding the hungry is a pretty big issue.
It is. But I mean, that's the idea of emphasizing what it is you do agree on and focusing on that, not letting the disagreements shut down the government.
And anytime you invite anybody to anything, I don't care whether it's a White House event or Thanksgiving dinner, you're gonna tick off somebody. If you have a set
that's
number.
So bring your family in and there's fights there.
Right.
Well, you're not gonna invite Uncle Larry, are you?
Yeah.
That's right.
Not to see the Pope, no.
No way.
And Josh Earnest made it very clear yesterday in his answering of this question, discussion of this issue, said that the Pope visit is not a chance to talk politics in this particular venue, just as we've outlined. So it seems to be much ado about nothing as far as the actual you were invited and I wasn't, especially. And I guess it's just so you can't take the pictures. I don't.
Yeah.
You can't take the selfies. I'm not entirely sure, but.
Look at that. You're right. There's a lot of firepower.
There's a lot of Marines there.
I don't think anything's going to go wrong today.
No, I feel very safe. I guess all the branches of the service. I'm just seeing the dress blues stand out there. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation and move on to other issues that are in the news. We'll also take your letters as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We are discussing a wide range of issues, and just want to read a couple letters that we have gotten regarding our discussion of Pope Francis's visit to the United States, and then we'll move on to other topics as well this morning. Ray Graff, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain make up the group this morning. Robert writes, "Silly boy, Republican legislators, that's who, of who could disagree. They voted within the last 2 years to end unemployment insurance, to severely cut food stamps, repeal Obamacare, et cetera, et cetera." Remus writes, "I am not a Catholic, but when we judge the level of attention given to him by the White House and the Congress, we have to keep in mind that he is not only a religious leader, but also a head of state, the Vatican. Combining the two, I find the reception justifiable." Mm. Tom writes, "The Pope looks like he'd rather be in bed or noshing over some eggs and coffee."
Wouldn't we all? I don't know about that. He's not smiling. I will say that.
But you know, I think he's being probably somber for the occasion, wouldn't you think? And then
could be frightened of the Marines.
There's a lot of firepower there.
Sorry. That was an aside.
What was that, Rosemary?
Ted writes, "Whether here or abroad, power and influence goes to those with the numbers on their side. As of 2010, Christianity was by far the world's largest religion, with an estimated 2.2 billion adherents, nearly a third, 31% of all 6.9 billion people on Earth. Islam was second, with 1.6 billion adherents and 23% of the global population." That, according to a Pew report that Tom has sent us. And we also finally get this by a listener, Rick, who says, "The Dalai Lama was neither greeted by or met with our president on his recent last visit, suggesting a tip of the hat to the Chinese government, with whom are visiting the White House at the end of the week. The head of the Armenian church visited a couple years ago, and it too was ignored in preference to not upsetting the Turkish government. Impartiality is not practiced. It is all political. Hmm. It is all economic." Hmm.
Interesting letter. Yeah.
We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Moving on to other topics that are happening in the news today. A sad story that most of us woke to, that Yogi Berra passed away. The great Yankee, Yogi Berra, Hall of Famer, passed away at the age of 90 in New Jersey, and of course has been a part of the game for decades. Has been, I think, one of those people that you never hear really a bad story about, and one of the great names of the game, and certainly someone who I think has the reverence of just about everyone who watches and or plays the game.
Mm. Last time I saw him was 2009. It was the 40th anniversary of the 69 Mets.
Yeah.
And he was out there in uniform because he was a coach on that team. Yeah. And I'll always remember him. I don't remember him playing because I wasn't born yet. But I'll always remember him as the guy who took over when Gil Hodges died as the manager of the Mets and took him to the World Series. I'll never forget
when
that.
When did he stop playing? What year do you know?
60. He came back. He quit. I think he stopped playing for the Yankees in maybe 62, and Ian would be able to tell me. And then he came back for a few games to catch for the Mets in, I think, 60.
As a player coach?
Five.
Yeah,
as a player coach. And then he lasted maybe a handful of starts, maybe 20 games in total, and then
I believe I did see him play.
Really?
Yes.
The Polo Grounds?
Yes. We used to. Well, no. As,
you saw him
as
in Yankee?
A Yankee.
Yeah.
You know, in the early '60s, our church used to have a bus trip every summer, and you know, our dad would take us down, and we'd go to the Yankee Stadium, you know, on a Sunday afternoon. So, he was there when Mantle and Maris were there, right?
Wow.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So.
Yep. Do we have players now as big as he was, as iconic as he was?
I don't know.
It's not the same. It's
well, Derek Jeter, you know, comes to mind.
That's true.
But even Derek Jeter did not equal the playing record that Yogi Berra had.
Well, baseball was king then. I mean, baseball is it shares the stage with a lot of sports that are, some are bigger, football and the like. So I don't know if you'll ever see anybody who won 10 World Series, went to 14 World Series. I mean, just to play 10 years.
What's your favorite Yogi Berra-ism, Ray?
I think some of them are apocryphal, don't you think? They're made up. Now, I saw one on Facebook.
That's one that he said. You know, most of the things I said, I never said.
That was his book.
I love
it. I really didn't say everything I said.
He played, it says he...
you can observe a lot by just watching people. I like that one, too.
Yeah, well... Yeah.
It ain't over till it's over. Was that for the 73 Mets, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, if it was the Mets, I don't know the year.
If you come to the fork in the road, take it, right?
Nobody goes there anymore.
And there's one on Facebook today, and it was a quote. Apparently his wife was asking about where he'd like to be buried, and I don't know if this is true or not. She said, you were born in St. Louis, you lived in New York.
Montclair, New Jersey.
Where would you like to be buried? He said, surprise me. And I'm not sure if that's true or not, but...
But it's good.
Yeah, it was funny.
I like Yogi Bear, too. My kids always watched him.
He was the inspiration for the cartoon character,
the name
Yogi
was,
Bear.
Wasn't it? Yeah, that's cute.
I don't know who Boo Boo Baby was inspired by, but that's another story.
He played almost his entire 19-year baseball career, 1946 to 1965, for the New York Yankees. Widely regarded as one of the best catchers in baseball history, elected the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1972. Went back, as Ray mentioned, to play, and ultimately retired in 1969.
No. He didn't play that long.
No. Retired from baseball when he left the Mets as a coach.
Oh, that's all wrong. That's all wrong.
69.
So,
well, I'm getting it from Wikipedia. They're
never Wikipedia wrong. Is wrong. So, in other words, he was a coach on the Mets in 69. He was a manager when Gil Hodges died in 72. He took the Mets to the World Series. He managed them for a while. So he didn't retire from baseball. He retired playing a year before he came back for the Mets. And I want to maybe say it was 63 he came back and tried to catch for the Mets. But he was out. I think he stopped. Did he stop in 61 for the Yankees?
It
Ian
says
Pickus would know.
He stopped playing in the Yankees in 1963. He played with the Mets in 1965. He managed the New York Yankees in 1964. As well as 1972 to 1975, according to this.
Right. Well, you said he retired in 69.
Well, that was somewhere else. I'm using a new source now
you're
questioned
right.
The other source.
You're right, then.
Okay. And then
Ray is the source.
And then was a manager.
A lesson to journalism students, check many sources.
That's right. And then was also with the Houston Astros.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... sad news, and we certainly, back to what Rosemary said, you know, is there anybody like this? Because you have great players, but then you also have that character, right, of just being a character.
Yeah.
That sort of, I don't know, I can think of like Yogi Berra, Leo DeRocha, there's like a couple.
Except Leo had no rings.
No, Leo had no rings.
Well, no, I don't think he maybe.
Euchre, you know, Bob Euchre. You know, there's that kind of thing. There's sort of the characters of the game.
It's not just the sports. There was a media at the time. You'd go on talk shows a limited number or news shows a limited number, and you became a star because of that, this kind of one audience. Now people split off. There's lots of more
fragmented
news.
Audience, yeah.
Yeah,
well known to
audience.
Certain people but unknown to others.
Exactly.
That's what you get.
Yeah,
farewell,
exactly.
Yogi.
Yep, good guy.
Okay. Let's move on and talk about a few other things, and then we'll take a quick break. We also remind you, you can join our conversation roundtable at wamc.org. The other story that I want to talk about, which is just one of the sort of chilling stories, because you're just like, what don't we know? Volkswagen.
Wow.
Man, so here's Volkswagen apparently had a deception. They equipped 11 million vehicles with devices to cheat emissions tests worldwide. That's obviously has sent the company into a corporate crisis. The company assured U.S. and California regulators in 2014 in December that its engineers had a straightforward solution. Volkswagen told officials then that a software change would remedy the overflow of pollution emitted by its diesel cars, according to a state and federal letter to the company. At the time, Volkswagen proposed a voluntary recall of about 500,000 vehicles. The fix was either a technical failure or, as some officials say and believe, another ruse. By May of this year, California tests showed that the recall calibration did reduce emissions to some degree, but nitrogen oxide emissions were still significantly higher than expected. The extent of the recall, which is discussed in letters between government and company officials, is unknown. Company officials wouldn't say this week how many recall notification letters that VW issued to consumers. The incident is one of the highlights in what federal and state officials have likened to a cat-and-mouse game between regulators and one of the world's largest automakers.
You know, the language of that story makes it sound much more tame than it really was. This was a deliberate criminal action by a major corporation to deceive regulators. Somebody had to sit in a room and decide, we can come up with a software that can cheat the tests. And they got away with it. They sold diesel cars as clean. Their commercial said, hey, this
clean
is
diesel.
Clean diesel. It was not.
And it appealed to people's desire to be environmentally sensitive.
And it was still a car with lots of zoom because it was cheating. So they do this. This is not like Chevy discovering that there's a problem with their ignition and covering it up. This was a deliberate effort to deceive.
I don't know about that. This is not as bad as that.
Because people died when the
key issue happened.
Lots of money in this. And it's discovered, I love that, by researchers in West Virginia who actually test the cars on the road rather than in a lab, you know, where the software was designed to deceive. And they find that the emissions are 40 times higher than a lot. This was not like some little thing. And people do die and are sickened by these emissions. They're destroying the planet. So to make the death comparison doesn't work. It was a deliberate deception, and it's going to be investigated by the Justice Department.
The thing that amazes me is such a deception would have had to involve an awful lot of people at a very high level.
Yep.
And that story hasn't come out. You know, how many people? And there were 9 people, I think, fired from General Motors because they were aware of the ignition problem and didn't report and covered it up. And there might even be criminal charges against them. Certainly there'll be civil charges against them. But in this particular case, this had to have, you know, a
top
very
level
high
clearance.
Top level clearance.
A lot of money and resources were put into it.
And it was deliberate deception. Now, it undermines all the hardworking people who work at Volkswagen and work for their dealerships, and the owners of Volkswagens must be embarrassed. I'm on my third Volkswagen right now, and I'm really embarrassed. I really would look to replace it.
Do you have a diesel, though?
Not a diesel, but I mean, just your faith in the company that had
the
logo on your
car. The company's CEO is under fire. It looks like he'll go, and many more should go. And this is an unfortunate
addition
to a terrible history for Volkswagen. They don't have such a great World War II record either.
They overcame that stigma, you know, that little stigma that they were created under Hitler.
Yeah, they sold cars to Hitler, late night shows are putting it. And now this, it's really terrible, and it should make those who are supportive of big business.
It's unbelievable technically that they were able to do this. I mean, they had the regulators in California create a special dynamo meter test or whatever they call the test. So they said, look, your tests are wrong. You got to create something new. They had the regulators jumping through hoops.
But it does reveal
on 11 million cars.
It's a bit brazen.
It does reveal a cat and mouse game. I think, as you described it, Rosemary, it was perfect between regulators and these manufacturers who are trying to evade and find the ways around these obstacles that the regulators put in their way.
Ray's point is right. If they're smart enough to figure out how to deceive the regulators, fix the problem. Yeah. Put your smarts to work up that.
Well, maybe there is no clean diesel.
But the thing is,
or no,
clearly criminal. If you're actively trying to evade detection, whether you think the levels are set by California or otherwise are fair, if you're going to try to sell cars, you got to stick with it. And if you're going to actively try to do that, this is a huge story.
Although I guarantee you, we'll talk more about Deflategate in the end than we will about this story.
Oh, I don't know. I think this will go down. And I mean, it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. And how they handle this will become the subject of, graduate management and crisis management classes, et cetera, et cetera. It's a big deal.
It's unclear to me if the people trying to manage it are the same ones who were in on making it happen. That's unclear to me reading the stories.
Right. That will come out. It will come out. And you're right. The stock market took a 25% hit on its stock. I think it gained back a little bit, but it's still way down there. This is a serious blow that isn't going to be overcome easily.
Because it's hard to believe, and I, all cynicism aside, it's hard to believe that the CEO did not know that this was happening.
Yeah, either he knew, which is outrageous, or he didn't know, which is unthinkable.
Either way,
outrageous.
He's got to go. Either way, he's got to go. That's the thing.
Absolutely.
I'm sure
Martin
Winter stands.
And a few under him also. This wasn't just limited to him.
But as you say, it's a high level decision. It's not. This isn't like eight guys in an assembly line somewhere.
You don't just fall into this kind of software. You sit down and you plan and design it,
and you create it, and it takes a long time, and you have to come up with the devious idea of saying, oh, we want to cheat the system. This is what these systems do. This is how we do it.
I'd love to see what their defense will be. Mm. If they can somehow plausibly say, well, we didn't really try to do this.
One day we just made a mistake on the computer and it worked and it just fooled us all. And we weren't aware until West Virginia researchers discovered it.
I hope this is a wake-up call for those people. Many of my students among them, who believe that government can regulate big business. This is really very damaging to the company, as we've been pointing out, in their stock prices and in trust in the company, and yet they did it. It was worth
it to
them
to sell
11 million
cars.
It's kind of
the way tobacco companies hid the ill effects of tobacco.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So what's your solution?
Libertarianism?
More regulation?
Regulation of big business is a good idea. We need to do it right.
But they already regulated, right? The rules were already in place.
I'll be interested to see if the EPA has had funds cut for regulation and research, and the compliance standards have suffered because of government cuts and, sequestration or whatever, if that had effect. That'll probably come out too.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get a few letters and we'll take on our final topic. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Allardyce Glass & Mirror, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing sales, service, and installation of glass, shower enclosures, mirror, and screen products for the home. Allardyce.com. The Blue Marble, a world of gifts in Amherst, Massachusetts, featuring hand-selected jewelry from over 40 artists, including local, Native American, and fairly traded work, thebluemarble.biz. And Behold New Lebanon, farmers, auto racers, animal trainers, homesteaders, and more, sharing their personal experience of today's rural living, Saturdays through September 26th, beholdnewlebanon.org.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. A couple letters on VW. Cody writes, the VW scandal is yet another example of why we need regulations and regulators. Using the Republicans' favorite trope of deregulation would have only made the situation worse or undiscovered, the VW scandal. Also, we have this from Paul, who says it's about ultimate responsibility of the CEO did not know about the problem and approve it. He is at least responsible for creating a culture in which this thing was okay to do. We also got this note from Bill, who says in the 1990s, Hondas were built so well that their service departments were suffering. The Honda Corporation was caught installing a piece in the engine that was designed to fail after a number of miles, so the car would have to go in for service. Built-in obsolescence. Corporations will do what they want and have to do. We also hear from David, who says, regarding the Pope, my issue with the Pope as a Jew looking in is that it's a top-heavy religion. If you put two Jews in a room, you'll get five opinions. I feel like there are Catholics with different opinions, but they are stifled.
We just leave the church.
Well, there's a lot of Catholics with a lot of opinions.
Yeah.
And we also got a letter that I wanted to read, and I just have to find it here, from Joan, who says, it seems to me that it would have been a perfect day to invite an atheist guest to be on your roundtable as a fill-in for Libby or an ally.
Not necessarily. There's one here.
Oh, no. You?
Yeah.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, I thought
you were Catholic.
I thought we knew that.
I
no, she was grew up Catholic.
Not the same.
Yeah, I understand.
So
I understand.
There you go. All right. Here we move on to our final story. We move on to our final story.
I feel like this is a setup. It's coming.
I'll admit, this is a total setup.
What?
Oh. I saw this story and I was like, "Wait, I want Rosemary on this one." Okay, so, but it's also a major story.
Yeah.
Transgender woman said that she was detained and harassed at the. Hold on, I have to wait for 8 seconds for the stupid advertisement to go away.
You want the paper?
Orlando, Florida Airport.
Yes, thank you very much.
Hard copy, my friend.
Was detained and harassed at an Orlando, Florida airport security checkpoint Monday by Transportation Safety Administration agents after a body scanner detected an anomaly on her. The Shady Petoskey, who runs a Los Angeles interactive entertainment studio, said she was trying to fly out of Orlando International Airport but was stopped after entering the scanner. In her tweets about the situation, she said that the TSA agents calibrated the scanner for a woman and the machine flagged an anomaly, which she says was obviously my penis. She said she disclosed the reality immediately, but the situation quickly escalated over the course of 40 minutes. They patted her down twice. They fully disassembled her luggage and put her in an empty room with an officer holding the door. At one point, she said an agent told her to get back in the machine as a man or it was going to be a problem.
I don't quite understand that. You get to denote whether you're a male or female, and then they have settings for male and female.
Correct.
And so, because they had it set for a female, showed up.
Right, but I don't think the people. I don't like. They don't go in and say, "Are you male or female?"
She had an easy, simple
explanation, which in 2015 should have sufficed.
Exactly. There's two issues to me here. One is that they can find a penis, but not many of the guns and weapons that have gone through and tests. That makes me worry. It speaks to the efficacy of that agency, which I think is very much in question. And number two is politeness would solve so much. If they had simply said, ma'am, calling her, addressing her as a ma'am, which they did not do, ma'am, you know, this is really embarrassing, but we're just trying to protect you. Bear with us. There would be no answer to that. You'd say, okay, of course. Instead, it was like, we won't apologize. They wrote back and said, no, we won't apologize. We viewed the tapes of this, and our procedures are correct. They just asked for it. I think they have the same PR firm that's working for Hillary Clinton.
And Volkswagen. Yeah.
And Volkswagen.
I mean, it just
ridiculous.
Right.
That does not have to be a crisis. It shouldn't even be a story. It should have just been handled easily and gently. Like you say, it's 2015. We know there's transgendered people. And you could have just said, you could even have used humor.
And this took 40 minutes and she missed her flight.
She missed her flight. Yeah. I mean, you could even have used humor and said, look, we're not telling you anything. You're breaking new ground here. Bear with us. It's all they had to do. Be human.
Is it the training of the TSA agents that was lax here? Is it?
Well, certainly. I think so.
Or policy?
The policy is like that. That's what the TSA official said. They followed. Our agents did exactly what they were supposed to. Okay,
right.
Change the policy.
According to the TSA website, transgender travelers should use the name and gender that appears on their government-issued ID when making flight reservations and at the security checkpoint. So I think that's where the issue is.
Do they look at your boarding pass and say male, female, or do they look at someone who appears to be...
Either way, in this case, it would have said female, and the anomaly would have still showed up. There's really no regulation for transgender.
Once you've determined that the anomaly
is indeed
a penis, then move on.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, it was let's take care of this one and move people along. Yeah. Why do they have to go through luggage?
And then they miss guns. They miss, explosives. But they got
it almost seems intentional that they put her through this.
It does.
Excruciating experience because they can.
TSA boo, in short.
We're going to leave it there. now that I've got you all worked up.
But you knew when you brought up a TSA story that you would get this reaction.
I saw that story last night and I was like, oh.
There are no good ones, really. I look for TSA because I get a lot of mail about how rabid I am about TSA.
Yeah, I wonder why.
But really, I can't find good ones. Send them to me if you have them.
Lockbox total, you ready?
Yeah, go.
Okay, $106,607.
I love that. So the fund drive is October 5th.
Right. So that's up over $2,500 since yesterday. We have 12 days until the fund drive, October 5th, and we want to goose that total as much as we can. So
shorten the drive.
WAMC.org. More money in the lockbox, less money we have to raise during the drive, more faster we can get back to regular programming. 106,000 in now. We need a lot more before the fund drive begins on October 5th. WAMC.org. You can also call at 800-323-9262. 800-323-9262. Raymond, Rosemary, and Michael, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Thank you.
You are welcome.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.